Well, we all have concerns about our heart and the health of our heart, and this issue has come to be very present in my life lately, and I want to introduce my guest who's going to be talking about heart health. Dr. Marla Mendelson is a cardiologist, and among other things, she is the director for women's cardiovascular health at Northwestern Memorial Hospital and an associate professor of medicine and pediatrics at the Northwestern Feinberg School of Medicine. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Great to see you. Now, there is an issue with gender bias in the issue of medicine in general. And tell me why there's a difference between how men are treated by physicians and how women are treated by physicians in your area.
Well, not to get too technical, but there's two different things. There's sex bias, which is sex differences, which is biologic. And then there's gender bias, and that's more social and
okay.
Societal. So what's happened, I can speak toward cardiology, cardiovascular disease in women, particularly heart attacks in women, because we have a lot of data on that. And what happened about 20 years ago was that women would come in with chest pain, and they went out with Tums, and men would come in with chest pain, and they'd go to the cath lab, and they'd have operations and angioplasty. And the statistics were appalling because the men, after a heart attack, were doing so much better than the women because the medical community and women themselves were not recognizing that they could be at risk for a heart attack. So that was back in, it was 1991, I think it was, when we first got those studies. And so since that time, we've been trying to educate women and their doctors that they are at risk for heart disease. And it's some of the same risk factors for men and for women. Heart disease in women classically may occur more often after the menopause, but we can't ignore it. And we were seeing a lot of younger women presenting with heart attacks.
I hear that, you know, just friends of friends. You hear women having heart attacks and strokes at a much, much younger age than you would imagine. So tell me, let's talk about the classic signs of a heart attack in a man, and how are those, are they different in a woman?
Well, in a man, you've seen this on television. They grab their chest, they fall over, and everybody assumes they're having a heart attack.
Right.
And it could be something else, but that's what the assumption is. And if a man has a pain between his jaw and his belly button, his wife will classically take him to the hospital because he's having a heart attack. Women get chest pain. It's whether they recognize it or not. Now, the other signs of a heart attack that can be less dramatic are, you know, jaw pain, left arm pain, indigestion, and it's a matter of framing this into the context of when it happens. If you run up a flight of stairs and you have chest pressure, that could certainly be your heart. If you just ate something you weren't supposed to eat and you're up all night, maybe not your heart. So you have to put it in perspective. Women may have less classic symptoms, but when they look at studies the other way around of people who've actually had a heart attack, women will have chest pain and they will have signs of heart disease even before the actual heart attack happens.
And why is it, though, that women don't recognize it? Because I guess I think of women as being much more attuned to their bodies in some ways, and they're more sensitive to their, you know, their changes and things like that, whereas sometimes men seem a little blockheaded when it comes to their physical things. Maybe that's just my prejudice.
This has been going on, that women don't recognize that this is that they are susceptible to heart disease. That's the main
That's
problem.
The key, I guess.
You have to, if you think you're at risk for heart disease, you're going to go into the emergency room when you have chest pain. If you think it's a guy's disease or it's a disease I'll have when I'm 80, then you're less likely to show up. And we've proven through multiple studies, and especially in the setting of a heart attack, time is of the essence. We want to get in there. We want to open up the artery. We want to save heart muscle. And then there's a whole plethora of heart problems that certainly men and women are susceptible to that aren't necessarily heart attacks.
Okay. Let's just talk generally. And you do a lot of interesting work with heart, congenital heart defects and women in pregnancy and heart attacks and things like that. But I want to talk just generally about heart health. And, you know, there are some things I suppose you can control in your life, and there's some things you can't control. What are the things regarding your heart that are key in whether or not you have a healthy heart?
Well, there's it's very important. You talked about the ones you can control and the ones you can't control. You can't control who your parents are.
Right.
And there is a large genetic component, especially if either parent had a heart attack before age 50 or 40 for men. So that you can't control. But knowing that, the other ones you can control. Diabetes can be controlled, and if people have diabetes, certainly meticulous control of their diabetes helps as far as their cardiac output. Diabetes, people who have diabetes have heart disease, and we may not even know it because they don't get classic symptoms. The disease can be there for a long time, whether it's a young woman or a young man. It's certainly a very potent risk factor. Hypertension.
Yeah.
That, again, can be maybe genetically determined, but there are things people can do to prevent that. Smoking is
right
ultimately preventable. It's a hard thing to do to quit, and we acknowledge that, but it's a very potent risk factor, and it's very important to not start, but if you are smoking, to stop. And cholesterol. And cholesterol, there may be a genetic component to that as well. But certainly, as previously discussed, there's a huge dietary component that people can have control over. Now, for women, there may be a few more risk factors, like obesity, particularly central obesity, which has been classically described more in men. But central obesity in women may be a risk factor.
And when you say central?
Stomach area rather than the hips.
Okay.
You know, it's the whole apples and oranges.
Yes.
So if a woman is looking more like an apple with her central obesity, she may have increased risk of cardiovascular disease.
Let me just interject a question there. Is that because the fat on that and the pressure on your chest and that stomach area is more damaging, or is it just the nature of how someone gains weight has to do with something about their health, their
it
heart?
It probably has more to do with the weight gain and the metabolic consequences of it. So people who have fat around there, they tend to have more diabetes or pre-diabetes, more hypertension. So it really all goes together.
Okay.
That whole syndrome goes together. It's not more of a physical thing. I hate to tell you, everybody's heart has some fat on it, but that's not what gets inside the arteries necessarily. And then the other thing in women is sedentary lifestyle, which I thought was all cured after Title IX came in, but apparently not. So a sedentary lifestyle for women and when they went through menopause. So if a woman goes through menopause early, before age 50, the clock starts ticking a little sooner for the risk of heart disease.
Interesting. And I want to talk, when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about hypertension. I had a friend who was as healthy as can be. He rides his bike 100 miles on a weekend, eats fairly healthy, and it turned out he had super, super high hypertension and didn't know it and either ignored the symptoms or didn't know the symptoms. So I want to talk a little bit about that very important issue with Dr. Marla Mendelson. Do I take a break now, Ben? Yep. Okay, let's take a break. You're listening to the Karen Conti Show on WGN.
Don't tell my heart, my aching-breaking heart. I just don't think you'd understand. And if you tell my heart, my aching-breaking heart, he might blow up and kill this man.
Dr. Marla Mendelson is here talking about achy breaky hearts. She is a cardiologist at Northwestern Memorial Hospital. We are talking about hypertension. We're talking about high blood pressure. Do people who have high blood pressure and don't know it, will they have symptoms always or are sometimes asymptomatic?
Hypertension has been dubbed the silent killer for that reason. And sometimes you don't know you have it until it's done damage to the blood vessels of the head, like a stroke, or kidney blood vessels and cause kidney disease and kidney failure or heart attack. People don't know it. And that's the trouble. Now, there are people who get signs early on, and that's why it's important to check in periodically with your doctor to see about your blood pressure. Like, for example, a woman who has high blood pressure during pregnancy, there's a good chance she's going to have high blood blood pressure later in life, and she needs to keep an eye on that. So
that can permanently elevate a woman's blood pressure?
Or maybe a sign. It may be a sign of future problems. And it may not be a problem for 20 years, but then she may have problems. And so that's the problem with hypertension. And it's also the problem from a clinician's point of view as far as treating it. Because somebody walks in, their blood pressure is high, oh my God, I have to give you some medication. And they go, well, I don't feel bad. And of course you don't feel bad, but you really need to break the cycle. Now, there's things in the American diet like salt that may contribute, lack of exercise, but that's not necessarily the case. Some people just have hypertension. They may have some underlying kidney disease that we need to find out about.
Should someone go out and get one of those things that you get at Walgreens that tests your blood pressure? Is that a good investment?
You could get it at Walgreens. You could get it at the health club. You could have it checked at church. There's a church-based program that the Heart Association did. Anywhere you get your blood pressure checked, it's important.
Okay. And let's go to that dietary situation. Now, I'm going to talk, because this is like coming from me. I'm a pretty healthy person. I exercise a lot and all of that, but I love my salt. I love my salt. Is salt ever okay? I mean, like, I'm talking about more than your normal amount. I mean, there's salt in all foods, really a lot of salt. But the added salt, is that always bad?
It's bad if you have hypertension.
Okay.
It won't give you hypertension, but it's bad if you have hypertension, because not only does it perpetuate the hypertension, but it interferes with the medications. So we tell people who have hypertension, and there's good data to support this. There's something called the DASH, D-A-S-H, trial, where they took two groups of people. One group they gave medicines to and said, bye. The other group they said, you eat fish, chicken, fruits, and vegetables. You walk every day and don't put any salt on your food or don't have any added salt in your diet. That group also lowered their blood pressure.
Okay.
So there's something to it.
So, what it says in medication, salt, and the rest does not help. And medication. Okay. Someone said, I've been heavy and I've been thin. This is a texter from 630. I've been active and I've been non-active, yet nothing changes. I have hypertension. It's the same no matter what I do or eat. My parents live to be 196 with no heart problems. It's frustrating. It makes me want to give up. And medicine, salt, and the rest does not help. Does that sound common?
Well, I think you have to do sort of a deep dive into the diet to make sure there's no hidden sources of salt. Like, I tell people what has salt in it, and I see their faces just drop. It's pickles. It's olives. It's capers. It's Chinese food and Japanese food because of the soy sauce. It's lean cuisine and healthy choice has a lot of sodium. A lot of prepared food has sodium in it.
Because it tastes good. It makes it taste good.
It's a cheap seasoning.
Yes.
You know, if you want to sprinkle something, sprinkle oregano, garlic, onion, but nothing with the word salt in it. And so people like that have to do a really close look. I had somebody once whose blood pressure was impossible to treat, and we went over the whole thing, the diet, and I said, no pickles, right? And he said, I don't eat the pickles. And I said, what do you mean you don't eat the pickles? He goes, oh, I drink the juice.
Oh, my gosh.
So there's,
you don't need to be a cardiologist to say no to that one.
there may be something there that we have to, that is an explanation for it. It is better to be thinner than overweight for the rest of your health, besides the hypertension. But and then there can be a problem with the artery to the kidney, which is important to diagnose, especially in a young person with hypertension. There could be a blockage in the artery going to the kidney, and that's something that's eminently treatable. But you have to do the studies to find out.
Texter from the 312 says, my mother died at 45 years old, but she had rheumatic fever when she was 12. Should I be worried and proactive?
Well, rheumatic fever is...
What is rheumatic fever?
Rheumatic fever is caused by a strep infection, and it can result in rheumatic heart disease. Now, fortunately, this is rare in this country and in Canada and Britain, but it is still a problem in Mexico, Turkey, India, the Philippines, where they still have rheumatic fever. And since penicillin and the wide use of penicillin, we don't see it as much in this country. What rheumatic fever and rheumatic heart disease does is it affects the heart valves within the heart, not necessarily the arteries. And if the heart valve damage goes unchecked, that can be catastrophic.
Got it. Skipping around here, but I'm going to go to one of my favorite topics in life, and that is coffee. Coffee. You know, I think I read a study every week that it's good, it's bad, one's okay, five's too much. Is there a definitive view on is coffee and caffeine okay for your heart?
I've seen those same studies. Now, when people come to see me because they have palpitations and we talk about their lifestyle and it turns out that they have a pot of coffee every morning and then they have the palpitations, that's probably the cause. So it really is a very individual thing. Some say coffee is good. Some say coffee is bad. It is very confusing. And that's part of the problem now is that studies get reported without much context. And so we really don't understand what went into that study. Was it six people at a coffee shop or was it 7,000 people? So we don't really know that all the time. And so I think if people are affected by caffeine, because caffeine does cause palpitations, and palpitations can be an arrhythmia, which is an abnormal rhythm of the heart. I've seen that. I've seen that from diet pills, energy pills, cocaine. All of those things can stimulate the heart and cause symptoms.
And I'm assuming energy drinks goes into that.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
That's stuff you should stay away from.
Oh, yeah. I've seen arrhythmias. I've seen people who use them, and then they have arrhythmias, which are rapid, abnormal heart rhythms.
And does that cause damage on a long-term basis if you are taking in that kind of caffeine?
If you are drinking caffeine and you're having an arrhythmia or even just a fast heartbeat for months and months and months, yeah, it can affect your heart. It's rare, but it can.
Another topic near and dear to my heart is wine. Wine, you know, and I've read the good and the bad. One is okay, two is too much, women should not do anything. What is the common thought? Everything in moderation, you're going to tell me, right, Marla?
Right. What you have to think about is there have been some studies that show that there may be beneficial qualities to wine, and they think it's through something called a phytoestrogen, which may be protective. It's probably in all grapes of all forms. You have to realize some of the research was sponsored by wine growers. So it's moderation. And when they talked about beneficial effects, they talked about 4 ounces. And for men, 2 drinks seem to be protective. 2 glasses of wine seem to have a protective effect. But as you mentioned, for women, more than 2 drinks a day increases the risk of breast cancer. Uh-huh. And these phytoestrogens that are in the grape that we think are doing a good job, those have been associated with cystic breast changes in women. So a double-edged sword there.
Got it.
It is a lot of calories. It's a lot of sugar. But it's not prohibitive. It also can cause arrhythmias and fast heartbeats. But again, moderation.
So, but if it's between a martini and a glass of wine, you're probably better off with a glass of wine.
I don't have any science on martinis.
Okay. You can work on that, Dr. Mendelson. Now, what about red meat? And again, you know, I one of my questions is going to be, with all of this stuff online now, you're probably old enough to remember when we didn't have everything online and you couldn't get, you couldn't Google some symptoms and come up with 10 different diseases that you might have. I am in the same position with, as a lawyer. People Google and they come to me and tell me what the law is. And I'm like, well, that's Rhode Island law. That's not really Illinois. But there was a study about red meat saying that it may not be the fat in the meat that's bad for your heart, but it may be some bacteria that actually goes into your body that is a result of eating meat. Is red meat good, bad?
I don't think it's a good idea, personally. Okay. It leaves a very large carbon footprint. I've yet to hear anything beneficial about it. You can get protein through chicken, through fish, through turkey. Those are much more beneficial. In fact, fish is actually very beneficial because it has those good fats in it that are protective. There's nothing beneficial about meat.
Okay.
That I know of. And I tend to discourage it.
Okay. And just really quick, and we have to go to a break, and I'm going to get your telephone numbers out. How do you find a good doctor? You're an excellent doctor. I know my husband Jerry thinks the world of you. He thinks women listen better. He likes the way you listen to him and listen to what he says and responds to it. And how do you find a good doctor? What's the best way to do that?
I think the best way is to start with a primary care doctor, because everyone needs to have a primary care doctor. And a lot of times the best way to find those doctors is through friends. and personal recommendations, because there's lots of doctors out there, and it's really finding somebody that you are going to have a nice relationship with, that
right.
you are going to trust, that you are going to believe, that who you're going to believe has your best interest at heart. And then that doctor often recommends a specialist who they are comfortable working with, who they've seen in action. And I think that's the best way to go.
That's
really personal.
That's very, very good advice. If someone were to want to contact Dr. Marla Mendelson at Northwestern, how would we contact you?
The office is 312-695-4965.
Thank you so much for joining us. Will you join us again for maybe a health spot every month? How's that?
Sounds good.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Karen.
Coming up, the stories that matter from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio.